1460 WVOX.
Stay tuned now on 1460 WVOX for The Ballot Box with your hosts Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin. The Ballot Box is a monthly program brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Now, The Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Good morning, this Wednesday, November 20th, from The Ballot Box. I'm Nina Luban, my co-host is Tamar Tate, and our show is sponsored by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle, the New Rochelle branch of a nationwide organization dedicated for the last 100 years, that's one full century, of educating citizens about their rights as citizens. The League grew out of the suffrage movement in the 19-teens, to educate the millions of women who were on the cusp of receiving the right to vote, courtesy of the 19th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Today, the League maintains over 1,000 local branches in all 50 states, and it is most definitely not for women only. Men are actively involved here in Westchester and nationwide as members and in leadership positions. I'm a new member, and the more I study the history of this organization, the more I learn about this country, and the more I understand what a representative democracy is, and that its maintenance requires vigilance by all of us. My co-host, Tamar, is a veteran member of the League and currently serves on the board of the New Rochelle branch. Tamar, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Nina. I'm doing well. Thank you. It's great being here in the studio with you for another hour of the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle's new show, The Ballot Box. We spent a lot of time on our last show talking about upcoming elections. And now that they're behind us, I want to thank everyone who went out and exercised their right to vote. Special shout out needs to go to WVOX for helping the League of Women Voters get the message out to listeners about early voting.
Hear, hear. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, this was the first year that voters in New Rochelle were able to go to City Hall during the 2 weeks leading up to Election Day to cast their votes. And I'm not really sure how many people actually did that, but when I went to vote, it was the Sunday before Election Day, and it seemed busy. It wasn't packed, but it was busy. Hopefully next year there'll be enough buzz about early voting that more people will take advantage of it. It's a great way to get more people involved in our elections. And this morning we have a special guest, but before we introduce our guest, I'd like to let listeners know that our lines will be open to callers at 914-636-0110. That's 914-636-0110.
Our guest this morning is Epifanio Castillo, Jr. Epifanio is a Yonkers-based labor and employment lawyer with 30 years' experience representing clients, in particular, community-based, health-related organizations. He has also served as a legal advocate to Armed Forces veterans. He has served on the Westchester County Human Rights Commission, on alternative dispute resolution panels, and as an administrative law judge. He's currently on the board of trustees of the Dr. Richard Izquierdo Health and Science Charter School in the Bronx. All of this adds up to a wide variety of professional contributions to the people of New York and beyond. The key reason we invited Epifanio on today's show is his knowledge of the U.S. Constitution. Epifanio teaches classes in the Constitution at Westchester Community College. Those classes draw adults ranging from those who read the words of the Constitution for the first time in that class, to Constitution and history buffs, to retired professionals, including attorneys, interior designers, and everyone in between. Epifanio, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
It's our pleasure. Before we plunge into the document, and that's the with a capital T, I would like to ask what sparked your interest in studying the Constitution so far beyond what you might have learned about it in law school to the point where you're actually able to teach about the Constitution now?
I'm not sure I can pinpoint an exact event or time, but it seems to me, and my mother would agree, that I was born an attorney. Very quickly, I was very curious. Being a Latino in New York City and growing up in the 60s, I wondered what my role and the role of my community was in the larger scheme of things. I suppose that the first thing that happened to me was a few years after Brown v. Board of Education, my community, two busloads of children were shipped, including myself, were shipped out of East Harlem to the West Side, to 77th Street and Columbus, William J. O'Shea Junior High School. It was a culture shock. We did not understand it. Today they talk about people dropping out of high school. That group of people were dropping out of junior high school. Mm. And, you know, some power decided that five of us would decide that we were going to become self-educated. Mm. And we didn't know what that was. We didn't know what a study group was. We knew there was something wrong here. So we got together, five of us, and agreed that we would meet in the library every afternoon. We were fortunate that we had two libraries in East Harlem, one on 110th Street, one on 25th Street. And we said, listen, let's alternate. Let's go to the different libraries. And we just asked questions to the librarians, and they were very helpful. And we started to talk about the United States, and we started to talk about the Constitution. And we were all, had parents that came to the mainland from Puerto Rico. So that whole issue was, how come? Who are we? What are we doing? What are we doing here? And I'm still trying to get the answer to that question.
But you found your inspiration in the Constitution.
Absolutely. We all did.
Which is, I think, more unusual today, that people look to the Constitution as a source of inspiration. I mean, according to a poll that was released by the Bipartisan Democracy Project in June, 55% of Americans consider U.S. democracy to be weak right now. And two-thirds say it's actually getting weaker and that the nation's in danger of becoming a non-democratic authoritarian country. So, the Constitution is the same as it was when you found your inspiration, but what's changed?
Well, actually, there's been a couple of amendments since then.
Well, addition to the amendments. Regard for it.
Well, here's an interesting point. Very quickly, of course, one of the first things you're trying to look for is the definition of democracy. People should not try to find a definition of democracy in the Constitution because it's not mentioned in the Constitution. In fact, if you go back to the legislative history of the Constitution, which is the Federalist Papers, you will find that they had a very active debate over the question of what kind of country was this going to be. Is it going to be a pure democracy? Is it going to be a republic? And they decided that it was going to try to thread the needle or get on a balanced beam and get the best events, best aspects of each. If you read the Constitution, it'll tell you that what that Constitution insists on for the states is that they have a republican form of government. And if you read the Pledge of Allegiance, as we used to have to do every day in school, we pledge allegiance to the flag and for the republic for which it stands. So that's a question. It was mentioned earlier today that we're a representative democracy. We've been called that. Mm-hmm. We've been called democracy. We were called the Constitutional Republic. We've called a number of things. One thing that we clearly are not, and should not be, in my opinion, is a pure democracy. A pure democracy just gets a bunch of people to vote on an elected official or law, but it seems to be that there are no checks and balances with respect to a democracy.
Okay, well, we are going to follow up on that after our upcoming break. Thank you, Epifanio.
Welcome.
Bureaucrats and City Hall types aren't exactly thrilled when you take to the airwaves to spout off and tell it like it is on WVOX, now Westchester's only community station.
Impeachment Inquiry. Now, the latest from Fox News.
I'm Chris Foster. In his opening statement at this morning's hearing, Ambassador to the European Union Gordon Sondland says that demands that Ukraine's president announce investigations of Joe Biden's son Hunter and 2016 election meddling was a quid pro quo for a White House visit, and that he, Sondland, later came to believe, at least, that withholding military aid was part of all that as well. Sondland is the only witness this morning.
This afternoon, Pentagon official Laura Cooper will appear, along with Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs David Hale. Cooper has previously testified that she received no explanation for a temporary hold on the aid, which was released on September 11th.
Fox's Rachel Sutherland in Washington. President Trump tweets, "This is just an attempted takedown of the Republican Party by the do-nothing Democrats. It will never work." This is Fox News.
Come fly with us every day on America's legendary community station, WVOX, for you and yours at 1460 on your AM dial or streaming live right now at WVOX.com. Better yet, download the WVOX app and take us with you wherever you go.
1460 WVOX.
Let's return now to the Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back to the Ballot Box with our guest, Epifanio Castillo Jr. He is a teacher of the Constitution, and he just told us that the founders agreed that our country would be a republic. Not a democracy, but a republic. This was the word to describe us. What does that mean?
Well, it's complicated. There are different republics. Let me, the teacher that I am, let me refer people first to the Federalist Papers. Federalist Papers are numbered. If you look at the Federalist Papers, number 10, written by James Madison, he will set forth there in some detail is the problems that he saw for a pure a democracy and how a republic would serve us better. The best way to describe what kind of republic we are is we are a representative democracy, a republic, but the most important thing that I think that we are a constitutional republic. That is to say that the people, yes, have a right of citizenship to vote, and they vote for the leaders. But once those leaders are voted in, there is a law that they have to obey and not suspend in any way. And that, for us, is the United States Constitution. Understand this about the Constitution. All it does, and I say that facetiously, all it does is really create a government structure for which, under which this republic is to function. It has separation of powers. That's something that is important to a republic, not so to a democracy. They have checks and balances. It has checks and balances. It also, believe it or not, does not grant any rights to the citizens of this country. The purpose of the Constitution in a republic is to limit the power of the government. The rights that are set forth in the Bill of Rights, for example, a couple of others, those rights were called and were known as inalienable rights. Rights not created by the republic, not created by the government. It was these inalienable rights were created by some other super force. And what the Constitution says is, government, thou shalt not interrupt the rights of these citizens.
That super force was really considered to be of divine origin,
Yes.
Yeah, so that's explicitly written into the Constitution that there is this divine origin that governs us.
Correct. That's another one of the conflicting areas for us. We've had this issue of separation of church and state. Well, why then, when I go into every courtroom that I've ever been in, above the judge's chair is "In God We Trust." And every time we all have to pay a bill with cash, our coins, the coins of the realm, all say "In God We Trust." But that's another issue. For me, the important thing of this country being a republic is that it prohibits, the Constitution is the law of the land. All must follow that law, including the President of the United States. It prevents or stops or reminds the government that you shall not interfere with certain rights.
But can it also be argued that over time, the Constitution was signed in 1787, obviously remains our nation's foundational document. But in the last 232 years, do you think democracy has really departed from the intentions of its founders?
No, I think the intention is still there. I think what's really happened to us is that the definition of "we the people" has expanded. Certainly, if we stay with what the definition of people were at the time of the finding of the country and the Constitution, it talked about white men, 21 years old, and property owners. That was the people, the definition of the people. Since then, gratefully, they've included women in the definition of people. They've included other people from other countries that are permitted to become citizens when they get here. So the issue is the definition of people. We have people of color now who are moving into the majority. That's a concern. I think people are concerned about that. Why is that happening? What does it mean? What is it going to mean? I'll give you a concrete example. When this country became to become a world power in 1898, when it decided, and it was a decision of this country to find a way of going to war with Spain, and taking over some of its territory. Once they were victorious against the Spanish Empire, and the United States then became its own empire, the question became, what's going to happen to all these people that are now in the sphere of influence in this country? You had the Cubans, you had Puerto Ricans, you had the people from the Philippines, you had people from the Guam. To the ruling class, these people looked differently, spoke differently, had different cultures. What was going to happen? Well, there was a great deal of debate in terms of whether these people were ready to understand the cultures the way the ruling, the government understood it. And very quickly they said, no, these people aren't ready for this. So we'll have to treat them differently. And to this day, there are two levels of citizenship in this country. The people on those territories are still second-class citizens because they don't have full protection of the Constitution. They cannot vote for the president or the vice president of the United States. They do not have a voting member in Congress.
What's actually interesting about the population of the territory of Puerto Rico is it's 3.3 million people, and that exceeds 21 U.S. states.
Yes. That's why in my lifetime, in the lifetime of my youngest grandchild, it will never become a state. Because becoming a state means that you get two senators, and with that amount of people, you get about 8 or 9 representatives, mm-hmm. and that's better than about 33 other states.
Okay, we're going to pick up on that right after our break. Thank you so much. We are The Ballot Box, and we're speaking with Epifanio Castillo. Thank you.
World and national news. Here is the latest update from Fox News Radio on 1460 WVOX.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Chris Foster. In his opening statement at this morning's impeachment inquiry hearing, Ambassador to the European Union Gordon Sondland plans to say that demands that Ukraine's president announce investigations of Joe Biden's son Hunter and 2016 election meddling was a quid pro quo for a White House visit, and that he, Sondland, later came to believe, at least, that withholding military aid was part of that as well. He also says he followed the president's orders to work with Rudy Giuliani on Ukraine. Sondland's the only witness this morning.
This afternoon, Pentagon official Laura Cooper will appear, along with Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs David Hale. Cooper has previously testified that she received no explanation for a temporary hold on the aid, which was released on September 11th.
Fox's Rachel Sutherland in Washington. President Trump tweeted this morning, "This is just an attempted takedown of the Republican Party by the do-nothing Democrats. It will never work." This is a Fox News alert.
AgeWell New York's Medicare Advantage with prescription drug plans gives New Yorkers choices with $0 or low-cost plan premiums. Health plan options for those with Medicare or those with Medicare and Medicaid. Benefits include in-network physicians and hospitals, wellness and prevention services, Silver Sneakers fitness program, dental, vision, hearing, and more. Keep living and aging as healthy as you can with AgeWell New York, your way to age well in New York with Medicare coverage you need. Now is the time to enroll in a Medicare plan. Call for eligibility and enrollment, 718-696-0204. Or agewellnewyork.com.
There are quite a number of neighborhood flower shops around Westchester County these days. As in all things, some are better than others. And in the Colonial Village Shopping Center on Weaver Street in Scarsdale, just to the north of New Rochelle, there exists a florist of very great style and renown. Colonial Village Flowers specializes in beautiful seasonal flowers arranged in good taste, with the lovely low-key result that all Colonial Village presentations, bouquets, and arrangements look like they were actually grown, collected, and gathered in the natural setting of your own garden. Good taste in flowers has for years been a special trademark of Joe Ward and his talented floral arrangers at Colonial Village, featuring the natural look without pomp or ceremony. So please, know that there is at least one flower shop on your classy wavelength. Joe Ward's Colonial Village Flowers at 1515 Weaver Street in Scarsdale. Call 723-2888. That's 723-2 and 3/8.
And now with your latest up-to-date forecast, here's Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather on 1460 WVOX.
Updated weather forecast for Westchester on your Wednesday, calling for a mostly cloudy day. A few breaks in the overcast from time to time. Our highs, middle to upper 40s on northwest winds. Fair to partly cloudy tonight. Overnight lows 30 to 35. Sunshine tomorrow on Thursday. Temperatures right around 50. And at night, mostly cloudy, 41. There's a chance of some rain showers on Friday. Friday's highs in the middle 50s. Once again, for today, though, mostly cloudy or highs middle to upper 40s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri from 1460 WVOX, the Whitney Global Media Station.
Fasten your seatbelts. You're airborne with a completely unpredictable WVOX, where something's always happening. At 1460 on your AM dial and streaming live right now at WVOX.com. Download the WVOX app and take us with you wherever you go.
1460 WVOX.
Let's return now to the Ballot Box with your hosts, Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
We're here with our guest, Epifanio Castillo. And before the break, we were talking about the 3 million plus citizens of Puerto Rico who are not quite first class citizens of the United States. Please continue, Epifanio.
Yeah, but let me go back a little bit in history. Prior to the 1900s, there were a number of territories that were part of the United States. All of those territories were on the mainland, okay? And those territories eventually all became states of the Union. So that after the war with Spain, 1898, the United States got a bunch of territories that were not on the mainland. In fact, they were called insular territories. In this case, it reminds me of something that President Trump said recently. They were called insular territories because they were surrounded by water, large bodies of water. So, and that happens absolutely to be true. So, but there was, under the Constitution, the United States should not be holding territories permanently. There's no provision in the Constitution to hold territories permanently.
Well, one major point that stands out for me is these territories, they get taxed, and under, you know, the Democratic argument for statehood, that's taxation without representation.
Well, here's how they get around that. They were talking about federal taxes. So it is true that the territories, including, by the way, Washington, D.C., who's another mm-hmm. territory.
Who, by the way, has a population that exceeds both Wyoming and Vermont.
Yeah, another reason, well, that's not going to become a state. But... no taxation without representation. They said, "Okay, you won't have to pay federal taxes." Okay, but they pay all kinds of other taxes, but not including Social Security. Those people who work on those territories. You need to go back to something that's referred to as the insular cases. The Supreme Court cases has a series of cases beginning in 1901 through 1922 that created the situation that all the territories find themselves in. And by the way, there are five, the United States owns five territories in the same category. The insular cases decided that there were two kinds of territories. There were territories that were incorporated under the Constitution, which meant that they were on a path to full statehood. Then they decided that there was also a group of territories that were unincorporated. That's where all these insular territories were placed, not by the Constitution, but by a Supreme Court decision. And basically they said until the people in these unincorporated territories were made citizens of the United States, they will not be on the path to citizenship.
So these people are in sort of limbo. Let me ask you, if Puerto Rico had been a state of the Union with full voting rights in Congress and in the Electoral College when Hurricane Maria struck in 2017, do you think it would have been treated differently? In terms of rebuilding and FEMA funds.
Yes, it would have been treated like the states. And it would have still been a complicated rebuilding effort, they would not have been as ignored as it has been. It would be interesting to see what's going to happen to California. You know, the word from the White House is we're going to cut off FEMA funds for the fires in California. I don't know how that's really possible, but we'll see.
Well,
it is possible for Puerto Rico because they'll say it's a territory. And back in 1980, it made it clear that it wasn't even a sovereign territory, that they had no right to claim sovereignty on any level. But let me take it back a little bit, because if I told you this insular cases said that the road to statehood was paved with U.S. citizenship. Yeah. Well, in 1917, the people of Puerto Rico were anointed by Congress with citizenship. But then very quickly, the other insular cases said, well, you're citizens for most of the Constitution, but not for all of it. So they were not, in fact, put on a road to statehood. And so we now have in this country three levels of citizenship. We have the regular citizenship that all mainland folks have, including Hawaii and Alaska. We have the citizenship that Puerto Ricans on the island have, which also prevents them from voting for president and vice president and having an elected official in Congress that can vote. That's just not, Puerto Rico doesn't have that. But then you have America Samoa, who are not citizens of the United States. They are called nationals. They're U.S. nationals.
So do you think all these different layers of citizenship have sort of dissipated Americans' interest in actually being part of democratic life? Do you feel Americans are abandoning their responsibilities to maintain democratic ideals? Coming off our recent election, for example, I mean, here in New Rochelle, we have a population of about 80,000, and about 13,000 people out of that 80,000 voted in the last election. And obviously, 16%, it's not something to be proud of. Do you think that's a reflection of eroding popular trust in the democratic ideals?
I think so. But here again, it's a complicated question. How do you get people to vote? What are they going to be voting for?
Well, we are the League of Women Voters, and that's what we aim to do.
Well, and by the way, it's a great organization.
Thank you.
But you've got to build up, I think, the educational component of it, and you've got to get into schools. You got to get to the elected officials to say, hey, you know, education is still a local issue, really, so that you can get to those school districts and say, what are you doing about civics education?
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of schools don't teach it. That's a big problem.
And it's been a while. But you now we have to get back to it. People don't understand the important role they play. And whether you call the country a democracy or whether you call it a republic, it is still fundamentally true that it is the citizens of the nation.
Right. If people don't have an understanding of that, of the basic things that the Constitution stands for, they're not going to be able to preserve it.
And I think exacerbating that is the fact that we seem to be abdicating that role as citizens, and there is no vacuum. What has come to fill that are big corporations.
Yes.
And their lobbyists, people who have the airwaves, people who have the means to make their voices heard in D.C.
Right, the dark money.
The dark money.
Well, Doc Money shines a bright light, I have to say. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I just asked my wife this morning, I don't think that being a politician should be a career.
Mm-hmm.
I think people should come rotate through it. I think every citizen should have an opportunity to become a member of a representative government and then out.
Well, that's the argument also for term limits in the Supreme Court. I mean, no other constitutional court in the West guarantees jobs for life. So,
well, it's not just the Supreme Court. You've got the federal district judges are also appointed for life.
We're gonna have to take a break in a couple of seconds. But I would like to ask when we come back, if you could use as a real life example, the real big elephant in the room, in every living room, the current impeachment, how do we turn that into a teachable experience and moment?
Sure.
With world and national news, here is the latest update from Fox News Radio on 1460 WVOX.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm Chris Foster. In his opening statement at this morning's impeachment inquiry hearing, Ambassador to the European Union Gordon Sondland says demands that Ukraine's president announce investigations of Joe Biden's son Hunter and 2016 election meddling was a quid pro quo for a White House visit, and that he, Sondland, later came to believe that withholding military aid was part of that as well. He also says he followed the president's orders to work with Rudy Giuliani on Ukraine. Sondland's the only witness this morning.
This afternoon, Pentagon official Laura Cooper will appear, along with Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs David Hale. Cooper has previously testified that she received no explanation for a temporary hold on the aid, which was released on September 11th.
Fox's Rachel Sutherland in Washington. President Trump tweets, "This is just an attempted takedown of the Republican Party by the do-nothing Democrats. It will never work." America's listening to Fox News.
I'm David Asprey. I began my career as a teacher, and I invest a lot of what I learned then at Fox Business.
I'm Elizabeth McDonald. We're thinking about what you're interested in, what you care about, because we have families too.
I'm Melissa Francis.
And I'm Connell McShane.
We cut through the nonsense. We give you exactly what you need to know in a way that matters to you.
So you can make a better decision for yourself and for your family.
Fox Business.
Invested in you.
Black Friday is around the corner, and Fox News Shop is having their biggest sale of the year. It's the perfect time to give the Fox News fan in your life the greatest gift of all, exclusive Fox News gear. Go to shop.foxnews.com to get 20% off on all your orders, now through December 3rd. Shop bestsellers like the Fox News Channel hat, Fox and Friends mugs, the 5 Tumblr, Fox Nation t-shirts, and much more. Hurry and head to shop.foxnews.com to receive 20% off all orders, now through December 3rd. Happy holidays from Fox News Channel.
On Saturday, November 23rd, that's the Saturday before Thanksgiving, WVOX will broadcast live the annual Nourishel Thanksgiving Parade. All the excitement begins at 10 o'clock in the morning when the parade steps off on North Avenue and Eastchester Road right in front of Nourishel High School. As is our tradition, WVOX's Don Stevens will be reporting live, so when you tune in to WVOX 1460 on your dial, you will hear complete descriptions of all the happenings and festivities and the impressive floats. As our tradition continues, there will be interviews with your Nourishel neighbors expressing their Thanksgiving wishes. These parade interviews have become so popular throughout the years that we always replay them on the day before Thanksgiving. This year, Wednesday, November 27th, from 6 in the morning until 6 in the evening. The annual Nourishel Thanksgiving Parade and the special reports are all being made possible through the generosity of the Thornton Donovan School, a century-old school from kindergarten to 12th grade. We'd like to thank Thornton Donovan. Throughout the years, they have been such an important part of our Thanksgiving reports. Thornton Donovan, Thanksgiving, and WVOX, tradition.
Ladies and gentlemen, be ready. For the first time in New York, this new show, The Seer, with Prophet Zogo. every Tuesday at 5:30 p.m., Wednesday 5:30 p.m., and Saturday 6:30 p.m. Your life will never ever be the same. So listen to this here. Every Tuesday at 5:30 p.m., Wednesday 5:30 p.m., and Saturday 6:30 p.m. here on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com, your life will never ever be the same.
Stay airborne with us each and every day at 1460 on your AM dial or streaming live right now at WVOX.com. Better yet, download the WVOX app and take us with you wherever you go.
1460 WVOX.
Let's return now to the Ballot Box with your hosts Tamar Tate and Nita Lubin, brought to you by the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle. Once again, the Ballot Box on 1460 WVOX.
Welcome back, everyone. We're here with Epifanio Castillo, a teacher of the U.S. Constitution, and I'd like to ask him how we can turn the President Trump's impeachment hearings going on right this very second into teachable moments for our citizens, and let me throw in, of all ages.
Sure. This is the best possible course that one can take in civic education. It is clear that this process is being laid out for the public view. It is also clear that there must be two simultaneous processes happening here, depending on whether you're a Democrat representative or a Republican representative, because there's only one witness, and how they get two different things out of it is something else. But that permits thinking people of all ages to say, what's going on here? One of the things, I cringe every time they say this, the phrase, the people want to know, this is the people's business. What people are we talking about? Who's getting the information? What are they using with the information?
So information can be spun in so many different ways.
Right, except that each individual citizen of a republic has a duty to get those two interpretations of the same set of facts. There are no alternate facts. It's one set of facts being spun in different ways, and you as a citizen, you have to figure that out for yourselves, because that's going to dictate what you think about the process, what your understanding is about the process, and your role.
And your role is to change it if you don't like it. And that's where we, the League of Women Voters, comes in as a nonpartisan organization. We're encouraging everyone, get involved, join our organization, or let us enroll you to register you to vote and get involved in the process and make it work for you. So many people think their vote doesn't count, and that just snowballs. One of our show's goals is, in addition to encouraging people to vote, we also want to share a few community issues. There's a number of events I'd like to mention before we wrap things up for the hour. First of all, the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle has a great show on cable TV I want to let our listeners know about. It's called City People and Issues, and it has these long-format interviews with policymakers and public servants. They offer detailed and really fascinating information about what's going on in our community. Everyone can watch it on cable channel 76 on Mondays at 7 p.m. and Wednesdays at 9 p.m., and Thursdays at 9:30 p.m. The most recent interviews, my co-host Ina Arano on that show recently interviewed someone from Suez Water, and I learned so much about our water and how it's provided to us. And I have a lot more follow-up questions now. I interviewed our former New Rochelle mayor and current Westchester County clerk, Tim Idoni. Both really fascinating interviews. We also have our coffee and conversation at the New Rochelle Public Library a really interesting one coming up on January 17th, and you won't want to miss this one because the entire City Council of New Rochelle has been invited. So mark your calendars now. That's Friday, January 17th at 9 a.m. at the New Rochelle Public Library. I also quickly want to remind everyone as we head into the season of giving that Hope Community Services is having a coat drive. So please donate your gently used or new coats at 50 Washington Street here in New Rochelle, Monday to Friday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Let's try to keep our neighbors warm. And also want to mention New Rochelle's proposed $213 million budget has been released for 2020 with a tax levy increase proposed of 2.13%, which is the maximum allowable under the New York State tax cap legislation. You can view the budget at the city's website, newrochellenewyork.com. But there will also be a public hearing on December 10th in advance of the adoption of the tax rate. And I also wanted to mention for anything we've discussed today, if you need additional information or if you'd like to get involved with the League of Women Voters of New Rochelle, please go to our webpage, newrochelleny.com. And actually, if you join us, you'll get online updates and information from the state, county, and national leagues. And Epifanio, I would like to conclude the hour just quickly mentioning the census, which is one of the things the League is focusing on. The U.S. Census is required under the U.S. Constitution to occur every 10 years, and it's the process of counting every resident in the country. And for the first time ever in 2020, the census is going to be primarily digitally based. And maybe you could just tell us a little bit about why that's so important to get involved and answer those census questions.
It's important because, as you said, this is not an issue of citizenship. This is an issue of physically being in this country. And we need to count every person that's in this country for the purposes of it continuing to be a fully representative government. The importance of the census is to determine how many representatives to the federal legislature will be required for each region. And that is important for two reasons. Again, to keep the Congress properly manned, and I like, I'm sorry, I used the word man.
Staffed
by representatives of the entire population. That's what they do. They may get elected by citizens who vote, but they represent the community, the entire community.
And they use that data to make decisions on things like education, healthcare, infrastructure, political representation, things that affect you
funds.
And I daily.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's got to be pushed. Sorry to say that this issue that was brought up by the White House this year about putting the citizenship question, there were two reasons for that. And the most important reason is intimidation, to intimidate people from not going and filling out that form, because somehow a lot of these folks are now thinking, well, this is a responsibility of citizens. And there are a lot of folks here who are not citizens.
And the League of Women Voters really wants to reach out to those hard-to-count communities to ensure that they get included in that census count. The League of Women Voters is actually going to do some work on the census in three phases. The first will be education, and the second will be getting out to count activities. And if any of our listeners would like to get involved, they can reach out to us. And the last is we're always vigilant, and we will be participating in some watchdog reporting. So Census Day is actually April 1st, 2020.
Right.
So it's a ways out, but we're planning for
it. It's around the corner. It's around the corner. Start planning now, and you've got to go out there and start knocking on those doors. That is still an important element of this population count, and it's got to be done.
Yep.
Gotta, face-to-face.
Yeah, unfortunately, there are segments of certain communities that are afraid to come out, and they're afraid.
We go knock on their doors,
right? But
and by the way, when you when you register people to vote, I don't know how the resources of the league are, but please try to get them a small pocket size, very inexpensive size of the Constitution.
All right. Don't leave home without it.
Don't leave home without it. It fits in your back pocket. It's about the size of your cell phone. And it is critical that people read what's in there.
Yeah, I also want to mention, once the census count actually wraps up, it's going to be summer slash fall of 2020, the leagues are going to remain in the communities and will watchdog any issues from the ground. So everyone, please get involved. And we'd like to thank everyone for listening to The Ballot Box. I'm Tamar Tate, and together with my co-host Nina Luban, we'd like to thank you for listening. And we are a production of the League of Women Voters, and we've been very happy to be speaking with Epifanio Castillo today. And he is a professor of constitutional law. And thank you so much again for listening. Remember, it's up to you to help make democracy work.
It was a pleasure and a good class. Thank you.